Rick Theiner joins me this week to discuss cleaning and sanitation for beer brewers. This is Beersmith Podcast number 187.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 187, and it's early February 2019. Rick Theiner joins me this week to discuss cleaning and sanitation for beer brewers. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's the podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also the Riptide Pump from Blickman Engineering, designed for home brewers. This pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removable tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. It also has the integral Blickman linear valve for precise flow control. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. Again, that's BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 is available now for download, and also the mobile version's out. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider recipe support to the Beersmith platform, along with new integrated water profile and mash pH tools. Dozens of new features, including cloud folders, updated databases, support for fruit juice and honey, as well as new Whirlpool hop options. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com and give it a try. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, my guest is Rick Theiner. Rick is the president of Logic Inc., maker of the Ecologic series of cleansers and for cleaning and sanitizing that are used both for professional brewing and home brewing. Rick, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks very much, Brad. It's really great to be here.
So how are you doing today? I guess you're in Richmond, not very far from me.
No. And actually, it's great to be in Richmond when it's sunny. Unfortunately, not today.
Yeah.
But it's a nice part of the world, as you know.
It is a little cold and rainy today, as you know. Anyways, it's great to have you on the show for the first time. And of course, you are an expert in cleaning and sanitizing. So I thought maybe I'd just open with that. What is the difference between cleaning and sanitizing?
Certainly. Yeah, actually, and that's a really good question. And really, in the United States, we have a kind of legal definition of sanitizing. If you say that something is a sanitizer, that means that you are committing yourself to actually kill microorganisms, specifically reducing the count of microorganisms on a substance by a log 3, or you kill 99.9% of the microorganisms. So you really have to make sure that if you're saying I'm sanitizing the surface, that's exactly what you're doing. Otherwise, some people are going to come down on you and say you're not really doing that. And that's the professional side of things. In the home, we say sanitizing a lot of times, just kind of going back and forth between cleaning and sanitizing, but it may not truly be the legal definition we're using again. But cleaning is simply the removing of soil and or biofilm that you may have on a surface. So it's, are you removing dirt or are you killing microorganisms? That's the really big distinction between the two of them.
So when I think of cleaning, I'm like, I may wash the dishes, which probably is more along the line of just removing the dirt, really, right?
That's exactly right. And as a matter of fact, that's why we clean and sanitize, is because really, when you clean, chances are very good you're removing everything. You've got nothing to worry about. But there's always a chance that something's going to happen. Maybe you've got a contaminated drop. Maybe you've got a speck of dust that's landed on your clean dishes, and you want to make sure you destroy the last of those things that can potentially spoil your beer or cause you problems.
So for homebrewing, we're mostly talking about two separate steps, right? We're talking about cleaning our equipment and then sanitizing it, for particularly if you're on the cold side, like fermentation side, right?
Absolutely. I sell a product called One Step, and unfortunately, people have gotten the sense that, I can do both in this one step. And that never really happens, because if you have dirt, and you put a sanitizer on top of it, that dirt's actually going to act as a shield. It is going to stop the sanitizer from getting to the microorganisms and destroying them.
And there's also two more levels, right? There's something called disinfection, and then there's another one called sterilizing. You know, I hear a lot of people around homebrewing also say, "Yeah, I'm going to sterilize my equipment," but they're not really doing that, right?
No. Sterilizing is complete elimination of life. And in fact, you know, people will say, "I'm sterilizing this." I mean, even in operating rooms, they'll say, "I'm sterilizing this." I'm not sure they really are, because Malcolm, what's his name in Jurassic Park said, you know, life finds a way. You're always going to have that little tiny microorganisms that's just, it's too tough to knock out, and it's going to hang out and it's going to pop up and say, "Hey, I'm still here." Our key is really to knock it back to the point where it's no longer a problem. And in fact, even in infections in your body, you have viruses there, but they don't become a problem until they actually develop a population in order that's large enough in order to actually do something negative to you. And disinfection, though, it kind of falls between those two extremes. Well, not extremes, but from sanitizing to sterilizing, what it means is that you've knocked that population down further. It's a log five reduction, or you've got 99.99% reduction of your microorganisms. It's still not sterile. It's just that if you've got a very tenacious type of material or type of microorganism, you've knocked it back to where it's less of a threat. In our world, it's not as big a deal. Anything that's gonna be a problem in beer is gonna be easily outcompeted by the yeast as long as you follow that sanitizing step.
So we're mostly concerned about cleaning, sanitizing, and then disinfecting. And go through the four levels again. Give me the percentages, sure. If you will.
Yeah, cleaning is simply removing your dirt or biofilm. Sanitizing is a log three reduction, or a 99.9% kill. Disinfection is 99.999%. And then sterilization is the complete removal of all life.
So pretty serious stuff at that point, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Talking about putting in an autoclave or something.
That's exactly right. And actually, there was some neat stuff out there. I won't go into, but I'll say you can chemically do it, but you don't want to be in the same area when it happens.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the chemical process that removes the dirt, the cleaning process, if you will. How do we go through removing dirt and surface material during the cleaning process, and what does that look like?
Well, it's basically what we want to do is that we want to do one of two things. First of which is we'll hit the top level of the soil and either dissolve it or start bringing it up into solution. Because in reality, it's not the cleaner that's cleaning it. It is the water. And you want to bring it up, at least in our world, you want to bring it up into the water. And so you can do that from a top-down type of perspective. But the second thing that you can do is something called the peel-up, which is when you get water in between the soil and the actual substrate that is soiled. And both of those, actually, water is going to do that, but it's going to be benefited significantly by utilizing chemistry. And that's actually the reason why I specialized in the area. It's a horribly geeky area to be in, but it's what I do.
And my understanding is the surface, the material the surface is made up of, has a big impact on this process, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it has to do with what we call surface energy. So if you think about a metal, for those that are familiar with the physical sciences and how metals are put together, we've basically got a lot of free electrons on metals, and that's the reason why they're such good conductors, generally speaking. Those electrons actually give a good, nice free energy, which makes it easier for solutions to wet. It also makes it easier for soils to actually get on there and hang tenaciously onto the metal. Thankfully, the flip side is it also works with our chemistry to remove it. But you go to the other side of things and you've got plastics. They have very low surface energy. And in that case, you actually have a hard time wetting those surfaces. And as a result, you may have a harder time cleaning them. And when you do clean them, you have to be more careful to make sure that you're not actually damaging those surfaces because they tend to be soft. And then you've got glass, which is kind of the middle of the realm, which has a mid-level surface energy, which is something that you want to make sure that you are gentle with, but at the same time, you can bring a little bit more aggressiveness to it than you can with the plastic. And the funny thing is, it seems like just splitting hairs, but the fact of the matter is that by knowing that you've got these different types of surfaces, it actually helps you to formulate a better cleaner that's going to be able to handle all of those surfaces. Or maybe you just want to focus on one or the other, and then you're able to come up with a product that'll just strip a metal surface, but then it's going to really damage a plastic surface.
So go through that again. How does for example, if I'm working with plastic, do I need a special cleaner for that?
Well, generally, it's not so much that you need a special cleaner. It's that you need to take care with it. And when I say let me take it back. You don't want to use a heavy-duty alkaline product. A heavy-duty alkaline product like caustic that's often used in breweries will cause you problems. But on the other hand, you can use a mild detergent and still damage it by using a really stiff brush. For example, like, you know, one of these, which is a brush I tend to use in cleaning my tap lines, or this is actually for cleaning my tap specifically. It's a very stiff brush. And if I actually went after some tubing, if I went after a plastic fermenter or something like that, I would actually scratch that surface, even though you may not even see it, it would still be there. And those little scratches and those little cracks are going to be things that microorganisms can get into. They'll get a foothold in, and then they'll actually develop a biofilm. It'll make it very difficult to get those guys out. And you may end up with an infection that's coming from a place and you have no idea where it came from.
And I assume that's the reason why plastic stuff has a limited lifetime, really, when you talk about using a plastic fermenter or a plastic bucket, something like that, right?
Absolutely. As soon as you start seeing your plastic starting to get clouded or crazed is the extreme, and that's when you're seeing little cracks, you really need to replace it. A good way to take care of it is to use very mild materials. And for example, I mean, I'm sorry, it's what I make. One Step is a very mild detergent, and so it's very good on plastic. In fact, I've got a 5-gallon plastic fermenter soaking in it right now. But any cleaning product over time is going to make a little bit of an impact, even if you're only soaking it in the material over time.
So I assume you wouldn't want to leave some of these things in contact with the plastic for long periods of time either, right?
That's exactly right. No matter what you're using, I generally say don't leave it in contact with the plastic, because there's another thing that goes on. Our plastics themselves have plasticizers. They're solvent type materials that are actually embedded in the plastic that help them to be workable, to be formed, and then to maintain a pretty good service life in terms of being somewhat flexible and not cracking, crazing, things like that. Those will get leached out. I'm sure you've heard about the problem with cooking in plastic dishware and microwaves. The problem was those plasticizers would come out into the food or into whatever was being heated. And that's the reason why people identified it as a problem. In the same case with our brewing equipment, we've got those things that can come out, and the cleaners are very good at getting them out. And that's the reason why you lessen the service life of those materials.
Now, what about glass and in metal? Is there any limitations, working with those, cleaning those?
They're a lot more hardy. Glass, the thing I always worry about glass, I mean, when it fails, it's going to fail catastrophically. And in fact, I don't know if you've ever spoken with the gentleman who started Better Bottle, and Eric's last name I am forgetting, but he actually came out with it because he was on a crusade to try and get people away from glass carboys, because he saw through another part of his profession the damage that could be done to people by broken glass, particularly huge glass bottles. And so that's the problem with glass. Over time, it's going to become more and more brittle. It can be impacted by our cleaners. Generally, the very heavy-duty stuff, things that are strongly alkaline, things like caustic soda, caustic potash, things that have a very high level of sodium metasilicate, things that are generally listed as heavy-duty cleaners are going to take the life out of glass. Not nearly as badly as they will plastic, but they will make them more brittle. And like I said, the failure is not one of infection. It's about breaking. And they become more brittle. They become more easy to break. And I'm sure we've all got our scars from those types of things.
Yeah. And then, of course, stainless steel or those, even most metals, right, are pretty robust, right?
Absolutely. I'd feel safe using just about anything on stainless steel. The only thing you got to worry about is passivation. John Blickman, of course, or John Palmer would tell you all about it. And in fact, I talked to both of them at length about putting products together to prevent the need for repassivation or for providing products that allow for passivation. And it, the way that you know that you need to repassivate your metal is if you happen to notice a little bit of a rust. Actually, that's too late. But what you can do is you can acid treat it, and then you can repassivate it. And
yeah, I've actually written about this as well. But what can you explain? You? Okay, sorry. For folks, no, it's okay. But can you explain for the folks what passivation is and what the concern is with metal, stainless steel in particular? I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Yeah. So basically, with stainless steel, the reason why it's stainless or the reason why it doesn't corrode is because you've got other minerals that are present in the alloy. Minerals, metals, and what they'll do is that they'll actually come to the surface and they won't interact with oxygen in order to start forming corrosion materials. You won't have iron oxide, things like that. But if you remove some of that layer, you then need to dissolve that iron so that it goes back down to a layer where there is a non-oxidizable layer. And in fact, I can go into all kinds of things in terms of the grades of stainless and how to treat it. But honestly, as you said, Brad, you've written about it. There are many more people that are better at passivating materials than I am.
Yeah. I always worry about the chrome. Most stainless steel's got a lot of chromium in it. It's a chromium layer, I think, that we're talking about, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So there are ways to use acids and so on to restore that layer if you damage it, I guess.
Right. And actually, Brad, actually, you know what? Let me get on a soapbox real quick sure. Because there's one thing I want to let people know. A lot of folks, when they think about passivation, they think that nitric acid is the type of material that they need to use. What a lot of folks don't realize is citric acid also works too. And I won't go into, too much on that. It's just one of my... As you know, one of the things that I try to do is keep things safe for the user, safe for the environment, and I'm trying to push people towards citric acid as a passivating material. So if you're the type of person who passivates, consider that.
Okay, let's go into the next stage. In brewing, obviously, there's a number of contaminants that we use that we're removing. Can you talk about what some of the contaminants are when we're cleaning our equipment?
My pleasure, yeah. The big one that really comes onto your brewing equipment because of your brewing is organic soils. Basically, you've got lipids or fats, you've got proteins that are coagulating and then denaturing, becoming more polymeric in their structure. Carbohydrates, those are all the things that you see in your hot break, and they start forming along the edges of your brewing vessel and things like that. They'll also form with scale something called beer stone, which is a kind of a complex between the two minerals and organic materials. Scale on its own is going to be minerals typically from your own water hardness, but they'll also come out of the brewing process because there are going to be minerals in your mash. And then you've got complex soils, which are like the beer stone that I mentioned. It's whenever you start to have multiple things coming together, because if someone said to me, I've got a fatty buildup, I'd say, okay, I know exactly how to take care of it. But if someone says to me, I've got a fatty buildup that's put together with a scale, put together with protein, then we need to start considering how are we going to clean that off. And then the last thing, and this is the one that people really need to be aware of because it's very insidious, is biofilm. Biofilm is actually bacteria that starts to aggregate on equipment. And it's really common showing up in tap lines, for example. And it's difficult to get rid of because they form kind of envelopes that stick to themselves and stick to the surface. And if you just clean and sanitize, you're going to take off the top layer, but you've still got the lower layers there. So you need to go after those a little harder.
So those are all the basic types. Typically, we're going to use a cleaning chemical, right, with some water to attack these. How do these kind of work together? Because neither one of them really works alone, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So there was a pie chart that someone put together years and years ago. And basically, it's got three pieces. You've got time, temperature, mechanical action, and chemical action. And the idea is that all four of these things form a whole. But if you increase one, you can decrease another. Or if you decrease one, you're going to need to increase another. So, for example, if you don't want to scrub your carboy, then increase the amount of time that it's soaking in your chemical solution. That's a favorite of mine because I hate scrubbing. But if you want to save time, then scrub or use more chemical. These are all the things that interact, and they kind of have to be balanced in order to make an effective cleaning step.
I assume you can use the maybe hotter temperatures, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good one. But let me provide a warning, though. You can go too hot. And there are certain things that happen at higher temperatures, say over 140 degrees Fahrenheit, where you can set stains. You can actually make some things harder to remove in the long run. So as home brewers, those of us that don't have a really good, you know, we're not experts in cleaning and we're not doing it every single day like they do in a brewery or a distillery. I'd say as home brewers, you typically don't want to go any higher than, say, 120, 130 degrees, not just because of the safety of dealing with water that's that hot, but because of those things like I was talking about, where you can start to set things and you can start to fix them in place.
Well, walk us through a few of the physicochemical reactions that actually happen when we're cleaning. Obviously, you got some mechanical things going on. You've got some chemical reactions going on. There's a number of things going on here. And I know you have names for a number of these, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, my area, of course, my primary focus is interfacial phenomena, which is I'm a surfactant chemist. That is, I look at things that modify how water, soil, and surfaces interact. It sounds like a horribly niche area, but there are actually a few of us. And the big thing that we look at as a first step is what we call wetting. Wetting is actually what's responsible for getting the water in between the soil and the substrate. And that's what I was talking about in terms of the peel-up effect. It actually helps to peel up that soil. But then we've got other things going on. A lot of folks know that people will use caustic and strong alkalis, silicates, things like that. Those actually help to perform a function called deflocculation, because once you start getting those soils off, now you got big chunks of soil floating around in your solution that may drop back onto a surface and they're going to become a problem. You want to start breaking those up, and that's deflocculation. After the deflocculation, you've got these broken pieces floating around in the solution. Now you've got the other things. The surfactants help with this, but so do the alkalis and the silicates. And then there are even some additives that go in there that actually help to hold these materials in the solution so that they're suspended. Now, there's something else going on at the same time, which is dissolution. If you've got a sticky type of soil, sugars, then water's simply going to dissolve those. Sometimes you need a pH change, and acids tend to be acidic. Yeah, meaning to say, soils tend to be acidic, particularly organic type of soil. So we neutralize those with an alkaline cleaner. Just about any cleaner you're going to find is alkaline in its substance, and that neutralizes it. It helps that dissolution step. And finally, suppose you've got some fats and oils. Those are things that you're going to want to suspend in the water rather than having them just go to the surface where they're then going to fall out onto the sides of whatever vessel you're cleaning as you dump the water, and they're going to become very difficult to rinse. Those things you want to emulsify. So those are all the physicochemical reactions. And I'm sorry for just blasting through there. The thing is, I'm so used to thinking these are the things that are taking place, but it's that it becomes a little simplistic, but there really is a lot going on.
So how do you come up with a one chemical or a series of chemicals that does all these things, that takes into account all these different processes?
That's a really good question. And it really comes down to being able to recognize what those soils are and what kind of substrates you're typically going to be dealing with. Admittedly, in the home brewing area, it's a little bit more complicated because you know that there are a lot of people using a lot of different things. When we go to the commercial side, it becomes so much easier because you know everybody's going to be relatively standardized. But the best approach is to look at what you expect is going to be happening in that situation. Are we going to be having a lot of those organic materials? Are we going to be having minerals? Are we going to be having proteins? And of course, in our case, yes. And so we start selecting the chemicals that are going to interact with those materials so that we can make a product that's going to work the best that it can. And it gets really touchy because, for example, everybody knows that acids will dissolve mineral scale. But what a lot of people may not realize is that if you want to add a surfactant that helps to wet a surface so that ideally the acid's going to wet that mineral scale a little bit better, it actually gets in the way of the acid doing its job. And there are ways around it, but those are the things that you have to play with in order to figure out what's going to work with what and what's not going to work with it. And that's why you have to do a lot of testing. And in fact, I'll also say, that's something that I do more than anything. I make things dirty and then I try to make them clean. And that tells me what's working.
But I mean, it must be really difficult to come up with something that's going to clean my plastic bucket as well as my, you know, stainless steel boiler or something like that, right?
Well, it is. And in fact, that's actually the, you know, I tried to make a one size fits all for a long time. And that we had two products that were basically, that was their goal. You know, one step was going to be our light duty, straight A was going to be our heavy duty. And it's just gotten to the point now that we're realizing, you know what, it's best if you utilize different things. Because you're absolutely right, Brad. When I'm brewing, when I'm doing something that's really basic, really light, if I'm cleaning up a fermenter that's just, I just had a secondary fermentation, now I put it in the keg or I've bottled it, I'm using a mild cleaner. I'm using one step because I know it's not going to take much to clean it. I know that it's going to be mild on my plastic fermenter. But if I have just had, something such as I just rendered beef tallow in the lab, which is something I do from time to time, and I've got this big carbonized spot on the bottom, I'm going super heavy duty. Actually, the best test result that I have gotten is when I'm trying to remove that ring at the bottom of a stainless beaker. That's when I use things that are heavily caustic, heavily alkali, and they are still good wetting agents. And so you're right. You have to look at exactly what the situation is to really detail it. But some people just like the easiness of buying one product. And so we try to provide that. And that's why there are so many of my competitors out there. Nobody's happy with just the one option. So in their area, and it really does come down to this, in one area where they've got one type of water quality, something's going to work better for this guy. In another area where they've got a different type of water quality, something's going to work better for that guy. And it does really come down to things as simple as that.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that, but the water does have a big impact, right?
Oh, absolutely. As a matter of fact, when I formulated One Step, I lived in an area with very soft water, and it did a great job in our area. That's where I did all my testing. That's where I did all my using of it, but it didn't penetrate certain market areas very well, and I didn't really understand why. And then I moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where the water is so hard you can walk on it. And the thing that I found was One Step turned cloudy. Because it interacted poorly with the water minerals that were present there. And so I reformulated it so that it did a better job of dealing with minerals and it chelated them. It got them out of the way. Suddenly sales increased, you know? Yeah. And so you're right. The water is a big deal. And now I try to pay much more attention to it than I did before.
Yeah. Okay. We spent quite a bit of time talking about cleaning agents. I wanted you to just spend a few minutes talking about sanitizing agents and what makes a sanitizer really different than a cleaner.
Well, as I said, the cleaning agent is always going to be going after the soils, trying to remove them from the surface. You generally are going to want to rinse that, but the sanitizing agent is not a cleaner, and it's never going to be a cleaner. What it's going to do, I mean, you may use it as a cleaner. It's not sanitizing though. What you want to do is you want a visually clean surface, and then you want to apply a sanitizer. And there are a bunch of different ways out there, but the ways that they work out there. But the whole idea is that they are going to impact microorganisms, be they bacteria, be they wild yeasts, be they funguses, which is a yeast or yeast is a fungus. They're going to impact those in such a way to shut down their metabolism, to lyse their cell membrane, or to simply, you know, end the processes that enable that organism to survive, if there are any beyond those first two I mentioned. The way that you do that is you identify what a sanitizing agent is going to do for you. Maybe it's oxidizing, maybe it's a quaternary ammonium compound, which interacts with the biological process. Maybe it's a lactate. Again, it goes for the biological process. All those things are out there. The big question you should always ask the person that you're getting your sanitizer from is going to be, is this a broad range material? Because as brewers, we work with broad range materials.
You established a few basic rules to help brewers maintain their equipment. What are those?
Good question. That's one of the favorite things that I love to tell people when I'm meeting with homebrewers and talking at clubs and things like that, is that I always tell people, clean your equipment before you even use it the first time. The reason why you need to do that is because there's no telling what's on it. If it's been sitting in the homebrew shop, probably you've got tons of grain that's floating in the air. If it's a pot or a kettle or a grandfather, or not to play favorites with folks that manufacture the equipment, whatever it is, it may have machining oils on it, which you probably don't want to be brewing with. So you always want to clean your equipment right when it comes home, right before you use it, and then sanitize it. Now, of course, you don't have to sanitize something such as a mash tun, because you're going to be running into your boiler and you don't need to worry about anything surviving the boiling process. But generally, I would suggest that you at least want it visually clean, even the things like the mash tun and so forth that you expect you're going to be sanitizing. Sanitizing the wort after it touches. Then, after you have used your stuff, clean it. Now, right now. Don't wait till tomorrow morning. Don't give it any time to set. The thing is, the longer that material sits on whatever you're about to clean, the harder it's going to be to get off. And the better any type of microorganism that may be floating around in there or may be hanging out in there has an opportunity to get into whatever it is that you have. Here, a perfect example are soft vinyl hoses. There are organisms that have the ability to actually get themselves into the vinyl. I'm not saying that they're like tunneling in, but they are able to anchor themselves very effectively. And so the faster you get the materials off of those vinyl hoses, the better your chances of maintaining it as a sanitary component of your brewing operation. I'm sure everybody's heard about, hey, I've got an infection. I don't know where it's coming from. People say, swap out all your hoses and suddenly it's gone. I mean, that's a perfect example of how you can avoid that, or at least extend the service life of it, if you pay close attention to getting it done. And bottles too. Don't let your bottle sit there. As soon as you empty a bottle, make sure you rinse it and put it up. Just get the visual stuff off. You can worry about cleaning and sanitizing later if you've really had too many and you don't want to deal with your bottle. And then on top of all of those things, just about the equipment, cleaning your premises. If you're brewing in the kitchen, make sure your kitchen's clean. If you've got a dedicated area, if you're lucky enough to have that, keep that clean. Keep it free from clutter, because that's how things get up into the air. That's how they start landing on material. And you watch for pests. You watch for, hate to say anybody might have this, but roaches, but, you know, rodents, anything like that. I've got a friend who actually had a mouse invasion in his garage where he stored his grain. Yeah, those things carry stuff that we don't want to have in our beer. And here's a big one. I have to admit, I was very guilty of this at one time. Don't buy in bulk unless you're really going to use it quickly. I had grain sitting around for a long time in my brew house, and then I started having problems with infection after infection after infection. Couldn't figure out for the life of me what it was. And then, you know, in a moment of, you know, inspiration, I realized it's, you know, those 50-pound bags of grain that are sitting over by the side of the door. And then the last thing that I say, that I always tell people, is, you know, get rid of your spent grains. If you're dealing with fruit, get rid of that, put it in your compost pile, just get it out of the area. If you have ever sat on something like that overnight and then opened the mash tun and gotten a whiff of what's going on in there, you know, that's a hotbed of infection. So get that stuff out of your brewing area as soon as you're done with it.
Yeah, I agree. I used to crush my grain near where I brewed, and that was a big mistake. I quickly moved that out into the garage, you know.
Thanks, Brad. That's a new rule. I had forgotten to put it on my list. I will make sure I put it on my list now. Okay.
Well, we talked a lot about commercial cleaners. Let's talk about household cleaners that can be used, and what some of the limitations of those are. I know there's a number of cleaners and sanitizers available, you know, just off the shelf.
Yeah. Oh boy. I tell people,
I know you can't cover all of them, but you know, simple ones like bleach or why you shouldn't use dish soap on your brewing equipment, that kind of a thing.
Absolutely. The big reason for dish soap, actually, let me pull back and say the big reason for me always, in terms of why I don't want to use any household material on my stuff, is going to be generally because of the fragrance, because there are fragrances. And the reason why they use fragrances is to make stuff smell nice. And they've specifically focused on that effect. They say we want it to keep smelling nice as long as possible. Fragrances tend to stick around for a long time. So any type of fragranced material you just don't want to use, because fragrances also tend to be water insoluble. They'll hang out on the interface of where the water and the material was. They don't like being in the water, so they'll go to the interface and then they'll hang out on your brewing equipment. And there's no telling what a small amount of that is actually going to do over a period of time. And so that's why I typically stay away from household type of materials. But even beyond that, for example, what we call a dish soap or a pot and pan soap, you don't want to use that because those surfactants that I mentioned, the whole way they work is because they go to an interface. They have a free energy driver, to use the thermodynamic term, that drives them to an interface. They like to hang out there. And those pot and pan soaps are all about it. They're going to put that stuff in there. It's going to go to the interface, and it's going to be very difficult to remove with simple rinsing. Now, in brewing chemicals, I'd say 99 times out of 100, whatever you get is going to have a low level of surfactant in it. But the key is these tend to be very soluble materials. They're formulated to come away and rinse away very quickly, and they're formulated such that they're very low. There's not much there to rinse. And so that's why arts, and I'm including my competitors in this, you know, why, if you're formulating something specifically for a brewing situation, it's going to be superior to your typical household cleaner. Now, one other thing I'll mention, and you mentioned bleach. When I got started brewing in 1992, that was, everybody talked about using bleach, you know, and those that have worked with it know how the smell seems to permeate everything. You get it in your hands. It's not going to get away from you. And it's also hard to rinse. And that's the whole problem. Not so much because of the residue just being there, but because the chlorine bleach reacts with the things in your beer. It starts giving you chlorophenols. And in fact, it can even go a further step. And we can talk more about that later. But
and chlorine gives you a lovely baby diaper finish, right?
Yeah.
I actually had a commercial beer the other day. I was at a brew pub, and I had a commercial beer the other day that had that. It was overwhelming. It was over the top.
You know, actually, it's funny you mentioned that, Brad, because you and I may have actually ended up at the same place, because I couldn't believe it. I got the chlorine right out of the glass after the guy poured me a beer. And what I was wondering is, you know, some of these guys, they have the glass washers behind the bar, and I was wondering if they were using chlorine to sanitize their glasses. And I briefly thought, maybe I should tell him that this is an issue. And maybe I should have. At the time, though, I without going into details, I felt like that wasn't the right time.
No, mine was worse. It was in the beer. It was actually in the beer. It wasn't their other beers were fine, for example, you know. There's one particular beer he's going. Anyways, I wanted to talk, give you a few minutes here at the end to talk about your products. You make a product called Straight A, another one called One Step, another called Sand Step NS. Tell us a little bit about each of these.
Oh. Awesome. Thank you for the marketing time.
And I'll throw up your webpage here. I'll let you talk about your webpage, but I'll bring
it up. Sure. My website is www.ecologiccleansers.com. And I'll just to talk very quickly about the name. A lot of people wonder why we're Logic Incorporated. A lot of people think we must do computers or something. It goes back to a simpler time when we weren't always thinking about computers. I was trying to think about the logic of making things ecological. And that's where we kind of came from. And so it's ecologiccleansers.com. And on our website, it'll tell you all about our products. But I'll mention, for example, one of our big ones, the flagship that a lot of people have heard of, is One Step. And I'll tell you, it's a funny story about One Step, because that was not my what I came into the brewing community with. I actually came in with a different product called Straight A, because I wanted to clean really nasty, vile bar bottles that I got from the Anheuser-Busch distributor at a buck a case. And these things were nasty. So I started using Straight A to clean those up and take the labels off. The labels will basically float off using Straight A. And then I got a call from a distributor, and they say, we want to sell your product for you, but can you make something else for us too? And they outlined what they wanted with One Step. which was basically the idea is it would provide an oxygen source that is recognized for being biocidal, although I myself cannot say that One Step is a biocide, sanitizer, anything like that. I can simply say that it does produce hydrogen peroxide in solution, which has been shown to have a biocidal effect. But I am not, if anyone from the EPA is paying attention, I am not saying that you should use it as a sanitizer.
So it's really a cleaner, right?
It is. It really is. And remember what I said, too, is that anytime that you use something to sanitize, it's being used to sanitize. It's not being used to clean. So there were some people that kind of troubled me in the past who came to me and they said, yeah, this is great because my bottles are filthy. I rinse them in One Step. It gets all the dirt off and I know they're sanitized. And I have to correct them and say, no, they're not sanitized. You know, what you should do is get a fresh solution of something you know is going to sanitize. If you believe One Step will do it, you're in your home, you can do your own thing. And then you need to rinse it with that solution. So it is a two-step process. And that's the reason why I kind of, I feel a little sheepish.
And you do sell sanitizers as well, right?
As a matter of fact,
yeah,
I do.
I bet you do, yeah.
In fact, I'll hold up my bottle. Let me get it in front of the camera here. This is our brand new sanitizer. It's actually, we pushed it out to the commercial brewers first because we felt like it was something that they could use effectively. Oh, and thanks for showing that. We've actually got a video that'll tell you all about it. Oh,
you do, right there. Yeah, right there on the website.
Yeah. And the thing is that there are people that like to use an acid sanitizer. There's a great quality acid sanitizer out there by my distributor. I'll give credit where credit's due. It's a good product, but it foams an awful lot. And it also gets deactivated by water hardness. So we wanted to put something out there that was an acid sanitizer, would help to remove scale. It would, and when I say it would help remove scale, I mean the stuff you don't see yet. The stuff that may be on a fermenter, on a pot, on a kettle that can be dissolved by that acid. And the problem was you couldn't use a foaming acid cleaner in a CIP system or a clean in place, a constantly recirculating system. And so we came up with SandStep NS, and that's what it is. It's an acid sanitizer. It doesn't foam. It doesn't have a problem with being deactivated by water hardness. And so we're starting to push that to home brewers now. We've had a number of commercial brewers. I better throw in a caveat.
Is that a no-rinse sanitizer as well?
That's exactly
which
right.
Which I like. I like the, yeah.
Yeah. But there is a caveat, and I better run this out. And that is, I should say, I'm a chemist. I deal with stinky, smelly things all the time. And one of the materials in this sanitizer, it's called propionic acid. It has an aroma. Some people think that the odor is kind of like acetic acid. And there are some people that apparently are kind of sensitive to it. And I've had people come to me going, man, this stuff smells horrible. And I'm going, really? I hadn't noticed. Yeah. But the brewers, you know, they're used to dealing with things that are pretty stinky, smelly as well. And so they don't really notice it. But home brewers, I a lot of times I feel a little abashed. And so when I'm showing things at conference, I always want to make sure that people smell the stuff. I'm like, now be aware, this does have an odor. You dilute it, it'll go away. It's not a problem. But I did want to throw in that little caveat.
So let's walk through your products again and tell us what each of them are for, basically.
Okay. So in our case, we've got the One Step, which is a simple, easy cleaner. One thing that's really great about it, it's got a high oxygen content. And so, for example, my fermenter, my plastic fermenter, light duty cleaner, so it's good on plastic. I put in the One Step, I let it sit there, and the actual action of the foaming oxygen helps to scrub that Kroisen ring off of the shoulder of the fermenter. It's great for that. It won't always work every time, but it does a really good job on that, and it loosens things up so that then you come back with your nice big carboy brush, and it pops off with no problem. The second product we've got is called Straight A, and that was really formulated specifically for really nasty bottles so that you remove the labels immediately. If you've got a yeast film in the bottom, a cake of some kind, or maybe someone's been smoking and sticking their cigarette butts in the bottle or something like that.
So, I mean, this is something that's a little bit stronger, right?
That's exactly right. And it's actually strong enough to compete with really caustic alkaline cleaners. But we've actually got a better product now, and it's called Ambrew Cleanser. And I'm really happy to say that we're in the process of having that picked up by one of my primary distributors. I'm hoping people are going to see it on their homebrew shelves within the next few weeks. It is something we've sold to commercial breweries starting back in the early 2000s. And it's just been such a great product for us. And certain people have asked us, why can't we provide this to homebrewers? I finally realized I needed to get off my, you know, nanny-ish high horse. I mean, if people, brewers are smart people. They know how to handle chemicals in such a way it's not going to hurt them. And it's a very safe material compared to things like caustic soda. And so that's why we're putting it out there. It does a better job than straight A in terms of cleaning really heavy duty soils. I wouldn't use it on plastics, but I'll certainly use it on glass, and I'll use it on stainless steel all day long. One thing I won't use it on is copper. It will damage, over time, it will damage copper. Not immediately, but you'll start seeing some darkening and some buildup of graying and things like that. The other materials that we've got, Sandstep, like we just spoke about, which is our no risk rinse acid sanitizer that doesn't foam. We've also got a product called Barrel OxyFresh, which we're looking forward to also getting out into homebrew stores. This is in response to people doing a lot of barrel aging, and honestly, it started out with wines. We sell a lot to wineries, and a lot of people use the Barrel OxyFresh for cleaning up their barrels. Sometimes barrels get musty. Barrel OxyFresh helps to take that out, return the barrels to service. And I feel like I'm missing something. I am missing something, and I can't talk about it right now.
Okay. We've got a new product. Looking at the list on your website. Yeah. I think you got them all here. Oh. Anyways, really appreciate you coming on the show. That's it's been great having you. Thanks again.
Well, I really appreciate it, Brad. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Sometimes I feel awful about, you know, dominating the conversation, but I guess that's what I was supposed to do, huh?
No, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Really appreciate it, Rick. Again, your company, Ecologic?
Yep. Logic Incorporated is the name of the company, but Ecologic Cleansers is how to find us.
And again, today my guest was Rick Thiner, president of Logic Inc., the makers of Straight A, One Step, and the Sand Step cleaners and sanitizers. Thanks again, Rick.
Thank you.
A big thank you to Rick Thiner for joining me this week. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's the podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the Riptide Pump. Designed for home brewers, this pump features a whisper quiet sealed housing, a removable tri-clamp stainless steel head that's easy to clean, and a built-in relief valve for easy priming. Get the Riptide Pump today, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 is available for download on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, new Whirlpool hop options, support for high-altitude brewing, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.